Let's talk about what I'm sure is the only concern that any of you have left with this course, which is when and what is on the final. So just as a reminder, the final exam is Thursday, December 15th, 9:15 a.m. in this room. There have been several requests from people to take the exam at an alternate time because you have other finals that day. So for the several of you that have requested, most of you have already answered back and said, unfortunately, no, because there are enough people that do have more than one exam on that day that I'd be changing too many people's final exam days. And so the college does have a policy. It's either three or four, I forget which it is, finals on the same day. Then in that case, one of your instructors is required to give you an alternate time. But otherwise, this is going to be the time. It is going to be 2 hours. The exam will be finishable in 2 hours. There is absolutely no chance of a multi-day final. Just not going to happen. So it will be carefully written to be comprehensive but completable within the two-hour time frame. I thought what we would do today is just walk through the textbook chapter by chapter and review those topics that seem to leap out at me as more important topics that we have covered this quarter. If I happen to accidentally forget to mention some major topic, like let's say for some reason I forget to mention the word hyperconjugation, you got to know that hyperconjugation is an important enough topic that you'd see it in some form on the final. So this is not the exclusive list of topics that could be on the final, but this is me trying to give you some hints here and there of the types of things I'm going to be more worried about. So just want to give that disclaimer in case I forget the one thing that you all yell at me afterwards. You didn't say you were going to have to know that. Yeah. So chapter one. Oops. That was, oh yes. Atomic and molecular orbital theory. So what kind of things are you going to have to worry about from there? Are you going to have to be able to describe ML, N sub L, N sub S, and atomic orbitals and all that? No. But what you do need to know is about bonding and antibonding. Related to that, you need to know sigma and pi bonds. Vesper theory's in here, and I won't say that I'll ask something specifically about Vesper theory, but you do need to know something about molecular geometry. And since it's related, hybridization. I'll put as a reminder here that methane was a very prominent example that came up when we discussed hybridization, because methane has four bonds that are equal in spacing and equal in energy, while as the atomic orbitals of carbon, the principal component of methane, those atomic orbitals aren't equal in energy and they're not evenly distributed. So I might suggest that you review that discussion of methane that we had. As far as what else is in this chapter, we do have acids and bases. And remember, we did have the three main trends that we discussed that can affect acidity. So that was hybridization again, sp versus sp2 versus sp3 orbitals holding anions. There was the inductive effect. And then resonance stabilization. I had not said it clearly before the quiz, which is why I ended up not grading those values. But whatever pKa values that I have quoted this quarter, you do need to know. So if I didn't give you a pKa value for something, you're not expected to know it. If I did give you a pKa value, you are expected to know it. You see, I have enough of these types of questions over the years. I'm trying to anticipate the questions coming. So you won't need any kind of pKa charts, but you do need to know about the compounds that we discussed. That's really the rest of chapter one. Any questions about material from chapter one? Because we'll probably have enough time that even once I go through all the chapters, we have a little time for discussion. Or would you rather just me get on with it so you know how much pain you have this week? So chapter two. At least it's not a 7 a.m. final. Because if you have some of the 7:30 classes, those turn into 7:30. Not 7:30. 7 a.m. Which that's kind of rough. Chapter two, nomenclature. Which includes common names as far as things like isopropyl, isobutyl, secbutyl, tert-butyl, neopentyl, those common terms, things like allyl and benzyl and aspargyl. Aspargyl, the one with the triple bond that we talked about, positioned next to a triple bond. It is in the written notes, so if you don't remember it, you might want to go back and review it. But we do have those common terms. We also have systematic nomenclature of alkanes, alkenes, alkynes, alcohols, alkyl halides, and alkenols. That's where you have an alkene and an alcohol on the same molecule. Remember, that's the one polyfunctional molecule, one type of polyfunctional molecule that you do need to know how to name. The alkenols, that's the one that has two functional groups. That's the one I'd said that you need to know how to name. There won't be the systematic nomenclature of ethers because I don't think we ever came back to do it. Amines may be listed in chapter two, but we didn't discuss their regular nomenclature either. So no amine nomenclature. If there happen to be rules in chapter two we never covered, you don't need to know them. No, you do not need a Scantron. Because the format of the exam will be exactly the same as the previous exam. So there'll be a combination of short answers. So there'll be some theory question. You'll definitely have mechanism again. Mechanism will be a major part of the final. You'll have fill-in-the-blank problems again. So it's going to be a mishmash of the formats of exams 1, 2, and 3. So no Scantron needed. Just a lot of brain cells. Physical properties, that's something that we discussed in lab, so that part of chapter two, not responsible for. Rotamers. So aside from the former exams being good practice for the final, you might have a small chance of a problem from a past exam being identical to the one that you'll find on the final. For example, there's only so many ways that I can ask questions about what a rotamer is if I want to get all the information out that I want. So specifically, do you remember that there, for butane, for example, are four distinct rotamers and that three of them have names, syn, anti, and gauche? And besides that, we have these terms eclipsed and staggered that you need to be familiar with. Can you draw all the four forms, both in terms of their Newman projection and their line structures? Which all these things I just mentioned are exactly the things that were on that exam or quiz where I last asked about rotamers. So I'm not telling you that on the final I'm going to use the same question. I'm just saying there's a possibility I could. And that applies to a lot of these topics. So now don't get your hopes up that the final is just going to be a photocopy of the other exams. But there are some questions that, because over the years you end up liking a way of asking it so much, you don't want to change what you think's already good, so it might show up again. But what I just mentioned about rotamers, you know, need to know about staggered versus eclipsed, And then you need to know those terms, sin, which remember that's short for sin periplanar, that term we use in eliminations. Anti, gauche, you need to be able to draw line structures, and Neumann projections. Along with this, you need to be able to talk about ring and angle strain, because this chapter also deals with cyclic compounds, and that brings us to cyclohexane. You need to know what an eclipsed versus a staggered... You need to know what an equatorial, another E word, versus an axial substituent is, and you need to know about the chair and boat forms, and you need to know about ring flips, ring inversions. That rounds up chapter 2. So any questions about chapter 2? Then moving on to chapter 3. That's the first chapter on alkenes. So there's a lot of the alkene nomenclature in that chapter, but I've already addressed the issue that you do need to know that nomenclature. You have the E versus Z versus cis versus trans versus not using any of those terms. We went over several cases, both in identifying the configuration of the bond itself and of how to properly name these different types of alkenes. So all of the possibilities you need to be able to handle. This is your first This is the chapter that's got kinetics, thermodynamics, and equilibrium on it. And of course, our lecture discussion of these topics was far more expansive than your text ever got to. I will give you the strong advice out of these three topics to pay less attention to equilibrium and focus more on kinetics and thermodynamics. Because even though we did cover equilibrium this quarter, and those of you who are enrolled in future quarters, I'm going to expect that you remember that discussion of equilibrium, because we're going to use it. But as far as practical use of these three topics, we really use mainly just kinetics and thermodynamics. Because for kinetics, we use that to discuss about the difference between SN1 versus SN2 and the rate-limiting step involved in that reaction. And combining that with thermodynamics, we then had reaction coordinate diagrams, wherein we had to label things like the transition state, products, reactants, intermediates, activation energy, heat of reaction. So expect that you'll have some kind of reaction coordinate diagram question. Along with that, Hess's law. One concrete aspect of thermodynamics we did tackle and use. Any questions from chapter 3? Yes. CIP rules, we covered them as well. That's just the Kahn-Ingold-Prelog rules. That's the priority rules that say higher atomic number gives a higher substituent. After that, mass number is the higher substituent. After that, it's the first point of difference. So CIP is just the abbreviation for the names of the people that came up with that system. Other questions? Yes?
What about entropy?
Entropy. Not going to specifically ask about it.
But you're going to ask.
I'm listing everything I'm going to ask. But I won't. But I'm not going to repeat everything. So I just said that I would not ask about entropy. Other questions? Then let's move to chapter 4. chapter 4 is more about alkenes, and that's where we first get the idea of Markovnikov addition. So I won't list all the different alkene reactions, because we had that as a part of a review for exam 3. I remember, like, we had one page where I wrote just reaction after reaction after reaction and all the different products. So that same list of the alkene reactions, which would be simple electrophilic addition, hydration, some other reaction where you're using an acid catalyst to add something in, where you have oxymercuration, demercuration, hydroboration, oxidation, halohydrin formation, vicinal dihalide formation, epoxidation, and reduction. All those different alkene reactions you're still responsible for. That's really the substance of chapter 4. So any questions about chapter 4? So I'll just say list of alkene reactions. And could you two please, if you're going to talk, go outside, you're distracting. Chapter 5. Ooh, this is going to feel like a shock. Stereochemistry. Our first discussion of stereochemistry. So you would be quite in error if you didn't think somewhere or another I wasn't going to ask you R or S. But remember, you do need to know what phantom atoms are. Because if we now have alkenes and alkynes that you could name where other parts of the molecule might have stereocenters, well, you need to know how to be able to handle those double or triple bonds. This was our first chance to get these terms, enantiomer, diastereomer, and epimer, the three types of isomers that you need to be familiar with. In connection with those, we talked about physical properties, one of them being optical rotation. Remember that for enantiomers, they have opposite optical rotation because they're mirror image molecules, but otherwise their properties are identical. Diastereomers are totally different molecules, so there's no connection from one diastereomer to the next as far as its optical rotation, and their other physical properties could be different as well. And epimers are just a subset of diastereomers. So what I just said for diastereomers would apply to epimers as well. We have the formation of racemic mixtures, which is something different than a compound being meso. So meso is a term that only applies to a compound because it describes a molecule that's got an internal plane of symmetry, whereas racemic refers to a mixture of multiple compounds that are all mirror images of each other. Now, one confusing thing that I did try to address at the time, and you all are probably aware of, but the stereochemistry for many of the alkene reactions is in chapter 5. Remember that this textbook, like many textbooks do, presents some chemistry first, goes back and says, here's this thing stereochem to worry about, and then goes back and says, okay, here's the stereochem for all these reactions you just learned. Where we did it the other way around. We learned what stereochemistry is first, then as we learn the reactions, I presented the stereochemistry. So in case you had used mainly my notes and never did go back and read the text, if you are going to read the text as part of your review, make sure that you look at the back part of that stereochemistry chapter, because that's where it describes the stereochemistry of those different alkene reactions. Now, I can't remember if I'd said it in this class already. Did I give some advice as far as how to study Did I emphasize really heavily about the flashcards and practicing mechanism? Did I also mention about teaching as a way to... Okay, so this section I already did that in. Okay, so I won't repeat that whole thing. That's chapter 5. Questions about chapter 5. All right, moving on to chapter 6. That's Alkynes. So there were a smaller number of reactions that you need to be familiar with alkynes. So there's the different types of hydrogenations. And I'll say full, cis, trans. Full meaning using a regular catalyst in hydrogen, which will take an alkyne to an alkane. Cis meaning using the poison catalyst, Lindler's catalyst, to stop the reduction at the alkene. And trans would be sodium and ammonia, which we use to make the trans alkene. There is the modified hydroboration, which your textbook fails to discuss, the modified borane reagent. I still want you to know it, and I already hinted that that might be a useful reagent to include if I wanted you to write a mechanism of borane, because there's only one hydrogen that can react. So you don't have to write it multiple times like you would in a borane reaction, standard borane reaction. There is the tautomerization. Both base and acid that I had shown you. The base tautomerization comes up in hydroboration oxidation. The acid one comes up in talking about mercury-assisted hydration, which I know that we started talking about. Did we actually see the full mechanism for the acid tautomerization in that mechanism? I can check my own cell. Let me look at the notes. So, Friday's notes. We talked about the answers to the exam. And that looks like all we did Friday. Let me check Wednesday then. Wednesday, we did hydroboration oxidation. We did do it. Okay, so we already did cover that. And then otherwise, there was alkylation that we also talked about with the alkynes. Now, let me see if there's anything major from that chapter we didn't cover. If there were any reactions that we didn't cover, they're obviously not going to be on the final. So this is it for alkynes. Questions on the alkyne chapter, then? Yes? Alkylation, that's where you're using a negative ion made from an alkyne to do an SN2. So in other words, something like this. Where I've added an alkyl group to that alkyne. No, the synthesis of an alkyne, that was the double elimination. So do remember that we talked about making alkynes from vicinal dihalides. So don't forget this set of transformations. Other questions from chapter 6? Yes?
Which part was the acid tautomerization? Because I just remember when we discussed the base.
The acid tautomerization is where we had that mercury salt that got involved. So it's kind of like regular hydration, it's just you couldn't use a normal acid catalyst. We used mercury sulfate. And then, so the mercury complexes with the one of the pi bonds, water comes and smacks open that pi bond, but you therefore end up with an enol. So we showed that the enol, the double bond opens, then the oxygen carbon bond forms a double bond. That's the tautomerization itself. That is the acid tautomerization. Just if there is some confusion, I'll write just the tautomerization part of it out. This is acid tautomerization I'm about to do, yes. So this is true regardless of what mechanism that you find it in. So this will look different than where we discussed it in class, but this is how the mechanism works. First, the double bond attacks an H+. You form a carbocation, which is going to form where the oxygen is because there's so much stabilization from that oxygen, exactly because it's able to undergo resonance. Once it undergoes that resonance, we now have a carbonyl that can get deprotonated. And now we've switched a carbon-carbon double bond for a carbon-oxygen double bond. Other alkyne questions? Yes?
In class, I don't think you finished this one.
Actually, what happened is I said that you would have a tautomerization, mercury comes off, and then out loud I said there's another tautomerization. So I didn't finish writing the mechanism, but we did finish it, you could say. Yes? Ooh. I'll put it this way. You should go back and try to figure them out your own self, but I won't specifically test on them since I did not go over them yet. So something like, let's take the hydroboration example and walk through that. So the utility would be to convert an alkyne into either an aldehyde or a ketone. So remember that this is different because right after hydroboration, you put an OH group on an alkene, and that's not thermodynamically stable. And that's why we saw that base version of the tautomerization mechanism. The OH group ends up at the end of the molecule, so if you have a terminal alkyne, that's when you're going to get the aldehyde. If the alkyne's internal, then even if it's the less substituted position, you're still going to end up with a carbonyl internal, which is when you'd get a ketone. So again, the synthetic utility just go from an alkyne to either an aldehyde or a ketone. As far as reagents, it's this modified borane followed by hydrogen peroxide and sodium hydroxide. As far as conditions, no water, just like we had for regular hydroboration. In terms of mechanism, we did go through the mechanism for that one. For regiochemistry, it's anti-Markovnikov because it's borane. For stereochemistry, there is none because you don't end up with stereocenters. Now, hopefully, you would have been able to rationalize those different aspects. But again, since we're not going to cover each one, I'm not going to specifically test on those for alkynes. Other alkyne questions? Oh, yes, Chapter 7, delocalization. Now, the final will only address those aspects of resonance or delocalization that we covered. This chapter is more applicable to Chem 12b, where we do talk heavily about conjugation. Now, so resonance and delocalization, that would be associated with conjugation. I hadn't written it down yet, but I figured it's so obvious that you still need to know what hyperconjugation is that I'm not actually going to write it down. But there was something I just thought of here. Oh, yes. That where we talked a lot about resonance and delocalization and conjugation, we also had some smog diagrams that came up at that time. I went a whole half hour without saying the word smog. But there it is. You're going to have smog diagrams on your final. And it seems very logical that the more sophisticated smogs, The ones that do have delocalization would be the ones that show up on the final. Now, didn't we have a quiz or a test question that was directly related to having a smog with delocalization in it? So how much of a good idea do you think it is for you to go back and study that question? That's it from chapter 7, because that's all 7 is about, is delocalization. So questions from chapter 7. Then we have chapters 8 and 9. SN1, SN2, E1, E2. So you still need to know the mechanisms for those reactions. You still need to be able to determine which one of these reactions is going to happen. So aside from knowing the 6 aspects that you have to know for any of these reactions, remember that we talked about 4 main structural effects. The substrate itself, what kind of nucleophile that you have, what the leaving group is, and then what the solvent is. In connection with solvents, you will need to know abbreviations for those solvents we covered this quarter. Things like DMSO, DMF. And that applies for reagents as well, like MCPBA. You need to know the structures and the abbreviations for any of those types of compounds. There is so much in SN1 and SN2, I won't list all the topics out, except by listing these 4 things right here. The nucleophile, substrate, leaving group, and solvent. We've addressed most of the discussion we had in this topic. So that really leaves just chapter 12. Chapter 10 is alcohols, which we get next quarter. Chapter 11, organometallics, which we get next quarter as well. And so chapter 12, and the only thing from chapter 12 that you do have to know is free radical halogenation. Which you do still need to know the relative reactivity ratios of 1:4:5 for chlorine and 1:80:1600 for bromine. You should still be able to talk about why chlorine is more selective than bromine. That was a question that hadn't come up yet, and it is a question that does involve reaction coordinate diagrams and thermodynamics. Maybe if I was going to ask a more sophisticated reaction coordinate diagram question, this might be a good one. So again, why is chlorine more selective than bromine? That's what the question's about. Now, this is the end of the list of topics. So those are the words you've probably been waiting a while to see. We have a few minutes left, so does anyone have any questions? Yes. Yes, they were, and I realized that after the fact, because that's what it used to be in the green sheet, and so I'll be adding 5 points to each lab exam to make up for that error.
So 5 free points?
5 free points, yes. Because I accidentally, because past quarters, the lab exams used to be made out of 75 points, but I did change it to 80, but forgot to update the points on the lab exams themselves as I went along. Yes? The only 2-step synthesis that may be there would be exactly this one, to use bromine and then a double elimination to go from an alkene to an alkyne. That is double elimination, yes.
Because in the lecture you said that's double SN.
Oh, did I? That's a, no. It's double elimination. Yes. So I may have office hours on Wednesday. I'm not sure yet, but if I do, I will end up posting it and probably send a message out through the portal system. Yes. The ring, okay, so the question was asked, in these cyclobromonium and cyclomercurinium mechanisms, is there a case in which the ring does open by itself? And yes, when we have something like a benzene group next door, if you review the mechanism we had for the lab lecture, then there's a case where that ring can open. But since that was only in the lab that we saw that, and I don't know if it even mentioned it in your textbook, that level of subtlety will not show up on the final. Other questions? Well, then I will see you all on Thursday at 9:15.